Hey everyone, welcome to Meet the Herders. I'm your host Harish. Meet the Herders is a series of interviews with past and present members of Ethereum Cat Herders. Ethereum Cat Herders help coordinate upgrades to Ethereum by aligning multiple teams from wallets to protocol clients. They also assist individuals and teams to write EIPs and ERCs. Ethereum Cat Herders also surveys and informs the community as the landscape changes. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Victor, who's the EIP editor. Hey, Victor, welcome to the show.
Hey, Harish, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Brilliant. So as the start of every show, I request the guest to please introduce themselves to the audience and tell us what you're working on currently.
Yeah, very happy to. In this context, I am an EIP / ERC editor, and I spend most of my time on the ERC side as opposed to other EIP side. And we will get into this because the name confuses many people, including some very core contributors and very deep involvers. And I also try to initiate and build a community to promote ERC and open adoption and open standardization for ERCs, which is called All ERC Devs. And in addition to Meetup, we also have a smart contract repository on GitHub to be completely open for people to share reference implementation. My goal is to help Ethereum, the ecosystem, to have a lot of different applications that can interoperate with each other.
All right, thank you for that. And may I ask, how did you discover Ethereum and how did you get started with it?
Yeah. Everyone I meet in the crypto space, especially in the winter, I like to ask the same question. How do you get into the space? For me, I first learned about Bitcoin in around 2011 or something. But at that time, it didn't strike. I had a hard time realizing the real impact of what a blockchain could do. And when Ethereum comes out, I look at it and realize, okay, smart contract could actually make you promise something that you, in the past, you have to trust the person will do, but now it will be executable in the witness of almost everyone. And that's what really make me excited. I am a community builder. I see myself, a big part of my life is to drive community building. So a lot of problems lies in how governance work. How do you make sure that people are properly aligned in governance decisions, and how do they respect each other and give people a voice? And so Ethereum come up, and then I said, okay, we see ERCs, we see ERC 721s. And realizing that there was no proposal of standardization for voting. So I start out doing ERC 1202, which is still a draft, by the way, because I think it's still very early in how governance will converge, but we evolved. So ERC 1202 is what I authored to begin with. And then I realized, okay, it's not just about voting, but also how to execute it. And so I further down propose a bunch of other things, such as smart proposal, which is a little bit like user operation. If you have been following ERC 4337, I also author a bunch of others like extension. How do you extend an EIP, ERC? How do you allow endorsement to be on ERCs, and how do you allow a jurisdiction to be represented on smart contract, those things. So I am first and foremost an ERC author and builder. And at the time I was trying to make sure that I'm following the right path, the right pattern, people are agreeing or people like those ideas. I tried to circulate it for peer review. It was very hard because many people are out there building, not all of them are having an eye on standardization. The very small group of people who come and go to author it are usually focused on their own proposal, didn't put a lot of attention in reviewing others. So I trying to approach people who have mass adoptions of their proposal to come and give us the feedback, like William Entrecam, who is the first author of ERC 721, and Fabian, who is the first author of ERC 20, right? And also the ownership standard, the interface standard, ERC 165, things like that. make some friends, realizing mm-hmm. there's value here to give feedback. And so I decided that, okay, maybe that's the time I can also help others. Give some reviews, help people think it's helpful, trying to reach out to me for more of this feedback. And all the way to the point that I feel, okay, I should regularly do this. Mm-hmm. And so one day, when I was doing that, I think it was PandaPip or Sam Wilson. Yeah, so they reach out to me and said, hey, maybe you should consider being an editor. And mm-hmm. so that was when I started becoming an editor. But yeah, I still consider myself first and foremost an author and builder trying to promote open interoperability.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting that you mentioned, because I feel it is it also important that the right set of eyes fall on a particular EIP or ERC and they give you the right comments to make it a successful one? Is that exactly. the right assumption? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. People should have technical competency, should have the right incentive, should basically understand what it takes to be a standard. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are good engineer who think how to build great infrastructure and products. But it's a different hat and different skill to propose something to be standardized. Mm-hmm. A lot of the ways of thinking and compromise you make is different when you build the implementation.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So now let's start to get into the details. So could you please describe to the audience what an EIP is and how does that differ from an ERC?
Yeah, so up until now, by the way, we have the EIP / ERC coming up. So that word is going to change meaning a little bit. But mm-hmm. until that final split is done, EIP covers a bunch of categories of proposals. EIP stands for Ethereum Improvement Proposal. I'm sure that everyone who listened to this podcast is probably aware of what it stands for. But the real difficulty, what gets people confused is that ERC stands for Ethereum Request for Comments, first used in ERC-20. And when I think Fabian, the author of ERC-20, coined the name of ERC, because it was one of the first, or if not the first, smart contract standard, mm-hmm. Different from previous ones. ERC doesn't have to be accepted or forked by clients, right? Currently, we have execution layer, we have consensus layer, but whatever it is, it's clients that mm-hmm. runs the network of Ethereum. And ERC doesn't have to be forked and to support. And it's more like, hey, we want to do it this way. If you like, you can do it with us kind of suggestion. That's why mm-hmm. I think Fabian called it request for comments. Now, when EIP, ERC program is evolving, people start to come up with core EIP category, interface EIP category, or network EIP category, interface EIP category, and ERC is another category. And so these are standards track where each different category address a different purpose. Currently, ERC specific referring to application layer. Of Ethereum proposals. And in the future, increasing once we have EIP/ERC splits, mm-hmm. people will increasingly starting to use EIPs only to refer the non-ERC part of those proposals. So that's a kind of an explanation. What gets confused is that at certain point during my activity in the EIP editor groups started to enforce a rule to require for the convenience that all ERC to be called EIP when to be cited as EIP in the text. So everyone who referenced an ERC have to use EIP/something in their proposal body. And very recently, when we decided to split, there's the new rule is that you have to address ERCs to be ERCs and only address the EIPs as EIPs when they're not ERCs. So this get people confused, but yeah, don't worry too much about it. Chances are if you're not building a client, if you're not proposing something to go into a client, either by fork or sometimes not necessary forking, you hard forking, you are working on ERCs.
Right. So maybe if I were to try to summarize that, ERCs are mainly application layer based. So they more or less target like smart contract Solidity APIs. But if you're looking at EIPs, they would be more client based, which could affect consensus layers or like state growth or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So for people who aren't like following the editing specifically, let's say you are generally an Ethereum builder or follower, typical ERCs are ERC20, ERC721 NFT, or ERC4337 contract abstraction. Typical EIPs are EIP1559 that defines the fees, things like that. If you hear about something in the news, it's very likely that it's an ERC. Although there's also EIP4844, which is dank sharding that's coming up. That's a typical EIP as well. So, right. Yeah.
Cool. So now that we have defined these two terms, how does an EIP or ERC, what flow does it go through once it's drafted?
Yeah. I think I want to also mention, if I may, why ERC matters, because I think it's an important thing to talk about. It's important to know the difference between EIP and ERC, and you can consider ERC as an optional EIP kind of thing, but it also matters to know why people build ERC compliant contract EIP, ERC compliant wallets. I usually direct people to this graph of DeFi Llama, right? Like currently there are 38.9 billions of dollars locked in DeFi, mostly powered by ERC20. So that amount of assets is being supported by ERC20 shows how much impact it has to the industry or to the world. Having an ERC or conform to an ERC allows the kind of network effect to take place. For example, in ERC20, you can call a function transfer or send. It doesn't matter, but the fact that people can agree upon one name allows wallet to only worry about one way to interact with your contract. And if wallets are interacting with your contract in the same way, every new contract can be deployed by exposing the same interface. So that kind of network effect kicks in the ERC. So the whole goal for ERC to be open and interoperable is to support this kind of open interoperability and harness the network effect to build even faster, to reduce the marginal cost of building new stuff. Yeah.
Cool. So tangentially, I might ask, is it possible for an ERC to be updated once it's finalized? So let's say if you find, I don't know, I want to add a new function. Can I do that? Or do I need to go and create a completely new ERC for this?
You asked a great question. That's a problem we are having right now. Yes, the problem exists. And the answer is, it's complicated. Okay. On the surface, it is okay that you propose something new. So let me step back a little bit. When we call something ERC20 or giving an ERC names, there are multiple status. The final status is called final. And in our current rule, final means it's not updatable. You can't update it. It means it's finalized. People are going to adopt it. They should not be regularly coming back and check it. And also a smart contract that is deployed to be conformed with this might not be upgradable or might not be changeable. So that's the reason why the current final status for ERCs are a final, and which means immutable. Mm-hmm. Regularly, you see there are new things that need to be add to the ERC, but you don't have a good way to point people to the new thing. And we are trying to introduce mechanisms to do. I can give you a few examples where updates would be necessary. Like in ERC 721, there's this very subtle difference between safe transfer versus transfer from. Safe transfer from allow you to check mandates, the conforming contract, to check the recipient, whether if they are an EOA, it's fine. But if they're not an EOA, they should be able to respond to you in a certain way so that you know that contract is capable of receiving an NFT and operate it, right? Let's say you want to transfer an NFT to a contract wallet. You want to make sure that contract wallet know how to deal with NFT and be able to transfer it out. That is because in the ERC-20, that thing doesn't exist. And people get bitten by, get hurt by this. So there were previous efforts like ERC-223, which is trying to solve this problem. And there's also an ERC-1373 or 1363. I could be getting wrong numbers. But there's a bunch of ERCs that's trying to add similar behavior where you can call and make sure something happens on the other side. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get a lot of traction. It's very hard to point people to the new behavior. There's active discussion in EIP group or supersedability, right? An ERC can supersede a previous one. Haven't gotten a consensus. Some of us support the idea, some of us don't, and all for good reasons. But I think you create a general concern that is worrying people, right? And another thing is that a proof is being widely abused in ERC-20, right? Like many DEX require maximum approval. So if someone fish the person or compromise the contract being approved for, a user can lose all their fund. It happens a lot of times. And that is very hard to update in ERC-20 as well. So yes, the problem is currently you can propose a new thing and try to convince other people to adopt to the new standard, but there's no good way to let people know there's a recommended way to supersede the existing contract. Yeah, existing standard.
I mean, I can understand it is a difficult problem to solve, because on one hand, you might end up locking or creating a new issue for the contracts which are on a previous version of, you know, the same ERC standard. But yeah, certainly interested to see how the discussion on this evolves. So I guess the question we were going for was, how does an ERC go from a draft state to a final state?
And yes, so actually moving an ERC from draft to final is not very hard. What you need to do is you make a GitHub pull request and you copy a template, put your whatever you propose there, update it, add the specification, and also open a discussion link, discussion thread on the Ethereum Magician forum. And then you should be ready to go to draft, right? A EIP editor or ERC editor has to come over and see it follows the editorial requirements and then to be ready for merging as a draft. And if that goes well, the next step is to move it into review. When you feel that it's stable enough, you want to ask for open active review, and then you will be soliciting the feedback and actively updating your next version, next snapshot. In that case, you move to a second state called review. Send a pull request, change it to review, approved by an EIP editor, you can be on review. And there's no requirement on time it takes between draft to review. And when you are in review, seeing people comment and seeing people getting excitement and feedback and update, for example, you're ready to move to third and second from the last status, which is called last call. In the last call, your goal is to make sure that people are happy with it and this is ready for adoption. In 2 weeks, usually the last call deadline is 2 weeks. People, if no new major feedback or no new major updates to your specification, you can move it to final. And then each step needs to be approved by EIP editor. Now, one thing that people often ask is that, what does it mean or what does it take for something to be called final? We currently take a very open-minded approach. Basically, you can check in almost anything. We do have very basic sense of worthability or basic sense of whether it works or not, but it's a minimum. You could try to come up with a standard that is almost similar to another one, but trying to compete with people. You could also come up with the idea that a lot of people doesn't like. We don't try to be the judger of who wins. Being final also doesn't mean adoptions, at least for now. I am personally trying to promote the idea that we should have some barrier of adoption before something can go to final in ERCs. But currently, as a group, wearing my EIP ERC editor's hat, the policy that we impose is that there's no requirement for a thing to be final. We do highly suggest that people have clear definition, motivation, clear rationale. We do strictly require that the specification is clear, not self-contradicting. We do require proper and sufficient consideration of security to be put in place. We highly recommend, but not requiring, reference implementation and test cases to be supplied. That said, I personally want to promote the idea that you should provide reference implementation if you really want people to adopt you. That's the only one single most important and easy thing for you to do to boost adoption. On the other hand, test cases is going to be very useful as well. So those things are not less understood. And therefore, a lot of people ask, like, how many EIP goes to final? How many people, how often, how long does it take to get there? A easy answer is that it depends. Like, if the fastest possible way is to make it in within 2 weeks, that happens when there's very wide, massive consensus that this is final, this is stable, nothing seems to be important enough to warrant a change to it at this moment, and yeah, let's go get it. Things like that happens only a couple of times. For example, ERC 712, an important, it's called EIP 712, but I personally think it's more of light in ERCs. So the EIP ERC 712 is a type structure data hashing and signing approach adopted by Ethers and MetaMask. It was in the draft for quite some time, several years. The first time it was created in 2017, and it was not finalized for a long time. But when we realized that, hey, actually the space is in desperate need in finalizing it so that people can proceed implementing it, we get quite fast. In a few weeks, we move it from the draft all the way to final. Because there's out there a lot of adoptions already in certain implementations. We just need to finalize it. On the other hand, there would be adoptions that is fast. There would be IP that is fast finalized, but never adopt. Or there would be EIPs that is draft, author forget to come back, doesn't have time to come back, get stagnant, but also widely adopted. So there is a mismatch of set feeling between an EIP is final versus this EIP is legit. For me personally, I think only adoptions give legitimacy.
I guess I'm also trying to understand, because you mentioned it, sometimes it feels like a chicken and egg problem, you know, who does the adoption come first, or does which of these things happen? If for example, this EIP you mentioned, which was stagnant or like wasn't moved to final from 2017, what were the reasons why it was left in that state, even though there seemed to be a lot of adoption for it? I guess I'm trying to understand, how does an EIP fall out of, you know, the cycle, and what causes it to do that?
I'll give you an example that I recently deal with. Usually the person who started this thing in 2017 are like, they are the OGs, right? They are OGs, they have good idea, new ideas, they have important things to do. So one example is that an ERP 1769, or let me just check. So I was involved, 1767 was now a stagnant one. Why? Because the author is the 1767. Oh, wow. I cannot even see it here. So there is a, let me just show the pull request. That's easier.
Mm-hmm. EIP 1717.
Yeah, this one. So the other day I was thinking of looking into options to generate a graph between ERC, people who transfer ERC to each other, right? And I was trying to find out whether there's already a standard or an interface for people to create them in a GraphQL. Mm-hmm. I realized I stumbled upon this one. The author, first author is Nick Johnson. Do you recognize that name by any chance?
Yeah. Yes.
Other than other great things he did, he also is the first author and I think one of the main builder for this, for GoETH of this interface. And so he authored this to try to promote so that other clients can follow suit as well. Of course, he's busy and of course he have other things to do. So he proposed this, doesn't have enough time to follow through, just get left. And these are things when things are adopted, but mm-hmm. not being finalized. In fact, sometimes the reason is also, it was very hard and mm-hmm. burdensome or even annoyed mm-hmm. to update the ERC EIP to the kind of editorial requirements that we do, we impose. Me speaking from an author, have real pain and real personal first-hand experience in facing that. Mm-hmm. When I was editing a few ERCs, during the time of a few months, some kind of new rules that are imposed by the EIP bot. And then the EIP that was previous, the snapshot that was previously valid under the linter rule is no longer valid. You have to update a lot of things for mm-hmm. it to be mergeable. And that's very frustrating. And okay. So when I become an editor, I'm trying to advocate against mm-hmm. those policies. We should make it easier for people to submit, mm-hmm. and people to publish, and yeah, be less restricted. But that was one of the reasons I see people drop out from continue editing or authoring their EIP ERCs.
Yeah, I understand. And I guess there is no way for the authors to like pass the baton to like a new bunch of authors if they say, you know, someone wants to carry their work on.
Yeah, that's also a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also a problem. There's no good way to ask for help or indicate that mm-hmm. if you want to help, you could, right? I know mm-hmm. the rule clear enough that I am able to offer that kind of help. And then Nick says, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't have time to touch it, but if you want to, I'm very happy. Mm-hmm. And I will be supporting you to do that. So that thing doesn't always happen. Yeah, just that we mentioned what kind of key message we want to say is that, yeah, you can help in any way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is an open space. If you come up with something that you're not super happy about, chances are it's just because we are lacking resource. So mm-hmm. yeah, come here and help. You're well, very welcomed and appreciated.
Nice. So moving on, what would you say are some of the common mistakes which authors make?
Yeah. And by the way, my experience is mostly about ERC. So maybe it applies to other EIP, maybe it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But in an ERC space, I see three common mistakes that people make. The first mistake is that people come here to propose an ERC without checking the existing conversation. So generally, we welcome competition. It's fine that you propose something that solves this. You propose a new thing that solves the same problem. And it's fine that you propose something that is very close to the other people's proposal. It's only a few minor difference. But it only makes sense if people search and research and understand what has been discussed and what has been proposed before. And before they can make an informed decision of whether a new EIP is worthy of pursuing. And so that's the first mistake that people make, is not researching existing ones. And the second one is that a lot of time people didn't prioritize giving reference implementation and test. That shows two possibilities. One is that they're not like, they have a solution, but they don't want to share. They treat it as some kind of private know-how or trade secret or whatever, but it just impede the ability for this EIP to get mass adoptions. So sometimes we have to remind people to share the reference implementation. Sometimes we have to try to kind of promote and remind them. But yeah, if it would be much easier for them to share implementation and test case when they first propose it. Now, still until today, it's not required. But the second possibility when people are not sharing reference implementation is that new authors might not even know how to build it. They just think it's an important and interesting problem to solve, propose something, but haven't think through what the other concerns or consequences, side effects of whatever one reference implementation can have on the other ones, right? Not sharing reference implementation and test cases doesn't help advancing the open interoperability and adoption. That's the second most common mistake that I saw. And the third one is that people were not here to invite adoption and open interoperability, which like in a more frank way to say is that they have some kind of project they want to promote. They're here to use an EIP to attract people's attention or prove some kind of legitimacy of their project by submitting an EIP. Of course, that's a kind of contribution as well. We still appreciate that. But if the mindset was not prioritizing open interoperability and adoption, it usually caused them to not share or to not feel necessary to use others' existing thing. They don't prioritize backward compatibility or compatibility of others. They also are very reluctant of merging proposals. So the story I saw, a good one, is that when ERC 721 was out there, there was actually 5 proposals from different projects, right? Back then, there were CryptoPunk, there were, I think, Decentraland, something like that. And the group are like great and open enough that they decided, hey, we should actually have a work group. Also, great credit goes to William Entrican, who were able to pull people together, find a way to compromise and negotiate so that they can decide that they will support the same content standard. That's the kind of spirit that creates the billion, if not future $1 trillion of industry of standardizing ERC 721 NFT. And those are heroes who are authors and who are early adopters, early people who built reference implementations or other kind of usage, and wallets who support ERC 721. But that's the thing, the reason why we want to have an ERC in the first place. It's not about, hey, I have a CryptoPunk or you have a Decentraland. Let's make sure my project is the utmost successful one and other people will look up to our project. ERC is about openness. So the third thing is that mistake is not bringing an openness mindset to work with the ecosystem. I think these are the common mistake that we have seen.
Yeah, thank you for those insights. I hope the listeners have a better idea on how to make their proposals more successful. So I think we are on the right track because I'd like to understand that now EIPs and ERCs are going to be separated. Could you please talk about the reasoning behind this and how it might look in the future?
Yeah. I think it's very important for anyone who worked in this space to know that there is an EIP / ERC split coming up. And it's very interesting because a year ago we have the merge and now we have the split. And the merge is the merging of the client of the ETH 2.0 versus the existing one, right? The using of beacon chains versus the mainnet. The execution chain. But the split here is like a different name, actually referring to the repository of EIP, original EIP, will be split into EIPs that is not ERCs and only ERCs. So the split referring to the repo change, the repo splits. Mm-hmm. Behind the scene, I think the rationale is that the group who work on these two, a few spaces, think the goal and the way of thinking, the knowledge, the skill set, and also the governance approach is different enough that it should make it makes more sense to split them. And I have to be frank that I wasn't a supporter in I wasn't convinced in the beginning for splitting it. I feel that it is very hard to gain people's attention already, and splitting them will split people's attention. Mm-hmm. Split them will reduce the right pair of eyes, the chance of right pair of eyes looking at a proposal. And I think over time, I gradually get convinced. I still have reservation in some specific case, but over time, I gradually get convinced that, hey, maybe the difference is large enough that the benefits is more than the trade-off that we make here. It makes sense to have EIP / ERCs. And so that's kind of the reason. EIP editing was so hard back then that execution layer core devs and consensus layer core devs starting to look for alternatives to propose their change. And that's not only creating difficulty and chaos, but also reduce the chance for them to have the right pair of eyes, for them to be interested to be engaged. And also the ERC is very active right now, that it has pair of eyes to look after each other. And so that's the time when we think, okay, maybe splitting makes sense. There will be a consequence that they will live in different website, different URL. So some of the old link will need to be updated. Some of the new governance or some of the new rules and groups need to be set up. But yeah, I'm very optimistic that this is going to bring a lot of good benefits, despite there might be some side effects. Yeah.
Do we have like a date when this is going to happen, or is it still being progressed towards finalized?
So in the proposal itself has finalized. That people, we as EIP editor and generally in the public, people like the idea, want to go that direction. The proposal, the meta proposal has been finalized. So that's a decision made a few weeks ago. Finishing it involves technically changing the repository, moving people over, updating the websites, updating the bot, and the procedure to update to editing. That might take some time and it will be a process there. But I'm positive. I'm optimistic that in a few weeks, if not month, in a few months, if not weeks, that this could happen. And I would encourage anyone to be aware of this and to follow it. When things happen, don't get surprised. And we're actively looking for people who want to participate in editing, in helping others, in peer reviewing people, and in governance and other form of governance.
Cool. And does if a proposal is already in review or it's been worked on, do the authors need to do anything about it? Or I guess the team will kind of take care of moving them into the right domains?
Yeah, I think for finals ERCs, and there's nothing that author need to do. We're trying to make it as lightweight as possible for the people who are still actively driving ERCs. They might need to interact with new repository once that repository is set up. And some of them are large. For example, like their whole working group of ERC 4337. And there's a working group of ERC 2535 diamonds standard. And so for those of the group, they need to have a way to set up new things. If they are applying some kind of internal consensus process, they need to be ready that it will happen in a new place. But other than that, I think we try to make it as minimum change to the author as possible. We do have some list that to track what's going on. But I think recently we need to make sure that list is updated. I like the approach when the merge was having a readability checklist. We should turn that into IH readability checklist as well. Yeah.
Split checklist.
Yeah, nice. The split readability checklist.
Good. So now maybe I would like to focus on like your work. Do you face any particular challenges as an editor? And maybe could you also go into what skills would be required to become an editor if some of our listeners wants to go down that route?
Yeah, I think if I were to think the quality necessary to become an editor, I think there are three things. The first thing is of course the skill, and their technical skill, their editorial skills. Technical skills that you should be very good and understand the technicality of the space, the kind of EIPs or ERCs that you're editing or you're trying to authoring. You should know the space very well. You should know what other people are talking about. How do you know that? Like first, I would highly recommend that you at least author one, or if not, one is enough, even more in that space. Do the implementation, understand it, what it takes. Invite people to review them. Understand that they get a sense that they understand what you're talking about. They are able to replicate what you do. They are able to adopt you if they want to. You should be good enough to produce that kind of technical work, at least to become a qualifying EIP editors in the technical side. On the other hand, you should feel comfortable, enjoy, and understand how to follow EIP editorial requirements. For example, are you able to use Linter? Do you know how it, what it works? Are you familiar with markdowns, right? There's also a requirement that was written in EIP 1, which is like you should be able to speak English fluently. I'm a second language English speaker. I think I can write. I can use ChatGPT's help to ensure that I'm expressing myself clearly. But basically, you should be able to write a technical document clearly. You should be able to take an editorial requirement policy, understand how to enforce them. And the way to practice and make sure that you are qualified is by giving other people editorial suggestions. So people didn't know that, but you can try to help editing other people's EIP or ERCs before you become an EIP editors. It doesn't need to be approved. Mm-hmm. You can be there out there helping. So if you continue doing that, if you regularly do that and then other EIP editors think that you're good, chances are they want to invite you to become a peer of them. So that's the you should skill-wise, you should be qualified. And the second one is that you should be able to work in a group. Like follow the rule, you can have an opinion, but you should also be able to disagree. You should be able to know that when you are in that group as an editor, you wear a different hat, right? You can have your personal opinion. It goes differently with the group opinion or consensus. You should enforce what the group decided to, right? And the third one is passion and commitment. So you should have very good passion and commitment to support this group. You should have the right mindset. If you're here to earn money, there's stipends that I heard from Porja and other EIP editors. I personally didn't took. But it's not going to make you rich. It's not going to even make you make it possible for you to support yourself. So there's not much monetary incentive. There's also not much, like, it's also not the right way to think that being an EIP editors is a way to promote something. Like, it is a reputation, I would say. Like, people trust you enough to put you in that position to help people and sometimes to give assessment to other people's work. But it's not the right way to keep you motivated to continue working on this. You have to have a calling that help you overcome when there's no other incentives, right? For me, it's like it's about open interoperability and driving and let community govern and build themselves. That's why I'm here. And then I think a passion and commitment is what you need. So skill, and be able to govern as a group, agree to disagree. And also the last one, be passionate and commitment is what you need to become an EIB editor.
Yeah. Thank you for going into those. I guess we were also looking at some stats early on. So maybe if you could just share with the audience, like what kind of workload does an editor go through, that would be nice.
Yeah, you mentioned this before we turn on the recording. This is, I think, Arash asked me, like, how long does it take for an EIP to go for final? How often do they come? I would, for anyone who has similar questions, I had it before. For anyone who has similar questions, this is a great place to be. Porsche, I think one of the lead or the most active lead that I know of in the Ethereum cat herders right now, regularly publishes the stats of what's called EIP Insights stats. And then so every month, this one, for example, in the past month, 60 become stagnant, 20 is new draft, 12 become review, 11 goes to last call, 6 finalized, right? And then there's some kind of dashboard of how they look like. And also you can use this to track other things. Another thing I think is important, or even more important, is this new, lately, someone, I think Ilemi, give him a lot of credit for creating this dashboard on Dune, showing which ERCs are being supported and being adopted. Mm-hmm. This is great. Yeah. So adoptions is even more important. And even time to adoptions, you can see here, and which chain they are. Mm-hmm. Adoptions is important for ERCs. As a blameless, a shameless self-promote, I have an ERCs to make it easier for an ERCs to be detected when they are adopted, which is called the ERC detection. I hope it's still there. Yeah, so this is still in review, but once it's done, if you implement this new interface, it should be easier to show people that your ERC is being adopted and how often and how much. Mm-hmm. And also who can they call the ERCs? And by the way, you mentioned how to upgrade an ERC. This also addressed mm-hmm. that problem. And hopefully this is a promotion of an ERC that I'm working on. Conflict of interest, and also you're welcome to propose your own. That's the insights. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing this. Make sure to include the links in the show notes. So in terms of the brains,
Harash, I think it's important for us to show this one. It is a lot of work of Hoja and the ECH group to have this EIP insights. So the one you saw, the Markdown HackMD, is actually a snapshot and summary of that last month. And you can see the overview here, which is called EIPinsights.com. Mm-hmm. The currently there are 687 EIPs out of many, and also there are this amount that finalized. Yeah, so this one is what you're looking into. Yeah, make sure that we share this link.
Surely. Yep.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, so thank you very much for those. I will make sure to include them into the show notes. And just the idea of picking your brains apart, those were really the questions I wanted to quiz you today. So just moving on, maybe I always ask the guests, you know, are there any causes or interests you are passionate outside of Ethereum, which you'd like to talk about?
Oh, yeah. Outside of Ethereum.
Yeah.
Okay. So outside of Ethereum, I run, try to practice distance running. Mm-hmm. I do frisbee, like the ultimate frisbee sports. Mm-hmm. I do improv theater acting, and I read and I like to sing. If you like any one of them, I'm happy to be connected and look forward to meet people. I think I'm also going to Dev Connect. If anyone from the Ethereum community is there, we should have some non-coding, non-building to connect us.
ERC and run mornings, you know.
Exactly. Run or hike. I also hike a lot. Yeah. That's what I want.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing those. And obviously, if you have any other message to the audience, you know, the floor is yours.
Yeah. I just want to say thank you, Harash. I am very happy to have the opportunities to speak to you and also through you speak to the audience of Meet the Herders. And everyone who contributed to this space is, I appreciate and respect. If there is one thing that I can share with my fellow herders and my fellow audience, I think ERC is about opening interoperability. We really need to have a lot of people come here and build things that can interoperate with each other. That's the charm of the new world versus the old world where all companies trying to be closed and trying to close their doors so they can capture the most value, which is reasonable for their stakeholder. But in our case, we are building a better future in an openness. If you want to do that, you can participate in authoring ERCs and EIPs for sure. You can build the application. I also like to invite anyone who do Ethereum ERC authoring to come over to our All ERC Dev here. You can find, I don't have a link here, but I will share it in your show notes. It's a bi-weekly call. People meet up there. We try to have a more active and synchronized way to ask questions, give feedback, advocate for adoptions. Also, if you like to build things, we also have a repository in ERC Ref. We try to build something similar to OpenZeppelin, but be more open, be more bleeding edge of standards. So feel free to share your reference implementation, make it ready to use, make it easy to deploy. And yeah, that's how we make the barrier to entry, barrier to adopt your ERCs as easier as possible. And so that's my calling. That's what I'm doing right now. Join us. There's a link. Hopefully it will look better later that you can come over and join our Discord, join our Git repository. So yeah, my key message is think open, build open. If you're going to DevConnect, we are going to have a ERC author and DApp builder meetup in Istanbul this November. So come join us, come meet up with us. We have a bunch of good good community members already signing up. So yeah, come here, join us.
That's a wonderful message to end the show on. So thank you very much, Victor, for sharing your insights. Really enjoyed our conversation. And I hope the audience did too. And thank you all for tuning in. I hope you found and enjoyed this episode. And I'll see you in the next one.